third. It is working. Okay.
We've been down on the floor until about 1 o'clock, and most of us needed a little time to try to get some lunch and take care of our office business before coming back to our afternoon hearings. We're fortunate to have Representative Bob Shiprack, who is the co-chair of the Special Interim Task Force on Liability Insurance, here to provide us with his words and briefing. We expect to be joined here by a balance of the subcommittee members in just a few moments, and also other committee members who are not members of the subcommittee have been invited to sit in and join us. For those who are here for our follow-up hearing at 3 and possible work session, and also for any other business this afternoon, you should be aware that because of some delay and lengthy debate on seatbelt legislation, the House is expected and will be called back into session at 3:30 p.m. And we will try to be excused from the floor session, but we may be subject to call, and so there may be a lot of interruptions in our afternoon schedule after 3:30. We'll try to complete our hearing and work session to the extent that that's possible, but at 5 p.m. there's another subcommittee on lien law, which Representative Phillips is chairing, which will be meeting, and we may have to break at 5, so we're going to have to work around those time constraints today. Representative Shiprack, welcome to the Judiciary Committee. We're looking forward very much to your comments and apologize for our late start.
No problem. For the record, I'm State Representative Bob Shiprack, House District 23, Clackamas County. As the chair has pointed out, I was one of the co-chairs of an interim task force on liability insurance. We spent many months on this issue during the interim. Very interesting subject for a layperson such as myself. I enjoyed it a great deal. What we strived to come up with during the interim was a report to this legislature, and specifically this committee. We knew one day we'd be here, and today's the day, on the issue of liability insurance. We wanted to make it as absolutely as comprehensive as possible. By that I mean hitting every possible area in our report that we felt that needed to be addressed by the legislature to reduce liability insurance costs. Much has been made of the tort area. However, I would direct the committee and the public to the fact that that's only one small piece of the puzzle. We have an insurance problem nationally. It's not unique to Oregon. And it's a function of this body, this legislature, to correct those problems. I'm also enthusiastic that with our new insurance commissioner and the heightened awareness of the problem, that this legislature will make positive steps in reducing or controlling, and maybe that's the best word, controlling these insurance costs. They are very cyclic. We can track them. We can probably even predict them in the future unless we do something to correct the ups and downs of the marketplace in relation to the insurance. I believe you have in front of you a copy, a very short synopsis of the interim committee work. I won't go through that, but just point out, as I've already mentioned, the various issues involved in this, tort, the court process, insurance reform, rates and coverage, insurance reporting requirements, the insurance division itself, and regulation. We also, for the committee's benefit, and I'm told, I've not read the vehicle that has come over from the Senate, but they did not deal with liquor liability whatsoever, and I think that that is a mistake. It's my belief that that and a couple other areas are probably going to have to be treated separately. I could not combine the issues during the interim as far as liquor liability and then general liability. You also have the corporate officers and certain nonprofit problems also that I think the committee should look at as a separate issue. It was very difficult for me to combine them. And then we had some miscellaneous things that came out of the report. What you have is the work of several months of a very broad range of individuals and viewpoints. I must say that some of the issues are here simply to force the legislature to look at them. Given our time constraints during the interim and the lack of a lot of expertise, frankly, we wanted to put certain issues on the table for this body to examine, particularly in the tort area. There was a reluctance, and I think we are still seeing that in the legislature as a whole, of certainly on issues such as a cap. Who wants to play the role of saying what's right and what's wrong? I wasn't prepared to do that during the interim, and good luck if you do. But we put a lot of things in the report, forces the issue, forces the legislature to look, examine them. We got them to you in pretty good shape, I think, for the most part. A lot of public testimony. It did require that a lot of data be collected. And I know Catherine saw more than enough of that. But it will give this committee the opportunity, based on the best available information, to come to some rational conclusions. And I'd like to just, I think I'll stop right there and see if there are any questions that you may have about it.
Representative Phillips.
Representative Shiprack, I know you haven't had a chance to really go through what the Senate passed, but did you help them in any way craft that measure?
The only thing I had
not
to do
that I was looking to assign blame or anything.
I don't go to the Senate too often. The only thing I did with the Senate committee was what I'm doing here today. I testified on the opening day. Senator Fry was, as is Representative Springer, were members of the task force, so they're well aware of the issues.
Representative Phillips?
No, that's fine. I just wanted to put it in perspective. I know who had done what. You were a member of the task force, weren't you?
Representative Bunn also served on the task force, as did Representative Hooley, who's going to come up and join us in about 15 minutes to sort of share her thoughts and perspective. Bob, I know that aside from the work of the task force, last session, you worked very hard on behalf of one of your constituents on an issue which was, I believe, a part of the task force recommendation and at one time was part of the Senate bill, and that has to do with the issue of the state's tort claim limits. As I know you know, the legislature last session did take some action in that area, only to be vetoed by the governor. Could you perhaps take a couple moments and just share with us your feelings based upon that work in 85 and what's happened so far, including the work of the task force, to tell us what changes you feel we might consider in the tort claims area and the limits?
Well, yeah, Representative Springer. I had a constituent. In fact, it was a large accident. There are many members of the legislature with constituents involved. That we had to do with the University of Oregon wrestling accident, if you will, in Eastern Washington several years ago. And a constituent of mine, as another young man, was paralyzed and remains that way. A couple were killed. Others were badly injured. And they came underneath the Oregon Tort Claims Act that says for all this damage, and well, for all this damage, the aggregate amount of money that could be spent on their behalf was $300,000, which is about what my constituents' bills are. So it's woefully inadequate. So the state pays it now. And one way or the other, but unfortunately these kids were hurt by that limit. We moved to expand it last session. The legislation was vetoed, and it was a modest expansion, and we put it back in this time as a separate bill, and I understand that Senator Fry is still working on that bill.
Representative Shiprock, do you know, I recall very well that individual when he came with his family to testify. Do you think that he might be available to testify before this committee? And could you perhaps assist us in contacting him?
He would be more than happy. He's came down twice, last session, to testify. And I can do that. I know the family quite well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Phillips.
Along the same line, Bob, did you listen to, I assume the risk claims people from General Services were in talking about their insurance premium costs and whether CAPS had assisted them dramatically and or not assisted them in keeping down costs. Could you just touch briefly on...
I'd be happy to. Representative Phillips, I did a little investigation on this, and I don't know if they gave you these statistics or not. The situation that I just described with that young man, less than 1% of the state's claims are involved that tort limit. They make much ado about saving money by having that tort claims limit, yet when only 1% of the total claims even come up to that, I find it hard to believe that that's where the money is really being saved. I just cannot believe that's the reason why they may save money. We had testimony during the interim that may have been one of the reasons why the state, and for instance Oregon is unique, that our state didn't have a large problem with liability insurance, and as other states did. And I just don't believe
state government, or
state government as a whole, municipal government, not just the state, but all municipal governments who are all under this type of act. I wanted to get in more involved in, I think the probably the real savings are, I think there's a lot of self-insurance and pooling going on amongst the municipalities. I never did really get into that very well, and I think that that's why our state was in much better shape than others.
Bob, do you recall the Senate bill number this time out?
It's 400-something. I don't remember.
And do you recall the limits that are being recommended, or the change in limits?
It's exactly as the bill passed through the legislature last session, basically moves the upper limit to half a million and allows... It keeps the lower end at $100,000, but allows an additional $100,000 at the court's discretion. I think they call them general damages.
By my recollection during the task force was that one of the inequities, not only to the victims under the State Tort Claim Act, but one of the inequities may result when there are multiple defendants and the state is one of those defendants who is found to have contributed substantially to the harm that may have resulted, and you have substantial loss, is that because of the tort claim limit, other defendants may be expected to pay much more than what would otherwise be their percentage of fault because of the state limit. And I think one case had to do with a school bus accident in Yamhill County. Could you maybe expand upon that?
It happens all the time. When you've got a local government or the state involved, because of the limits, the other defendants in the case are gonna have to pick it up. That's not unique at all. It's quite common. It doesn't happen every day. Don't get me wrong, but it's a fact of life.
Bob, I'm not sure where the Senate bill is at. Would it be your preference, or do you have an opinion at this time as to whether or not we ought to include some changes in the tort claim limits within the major bill that's before us, which is referred to as the tort reform or the insurance reform package?
Mr. Chairman, I don't see any reason why that couldn't be done. I'd also like to counsel the committee that the work we did on that bill, and I'll state it here for the record, and you can get representatives from local governments here. They did not object to raising those limits, and I think that's significant. They did not object to the bill.
Bob, another issue which I believe was included in the task force bill but was not made a part of the bill that came over to us from the Senate relates to the prejudgment interest question. Could you maybe, in the manner that you've addressed the tort claim limits, give us a little background and your feelings on the prejudgment interest issue?
Through the work of the interim committee, it was a feeling of the two co-chairs, myself and Senator Thorne, that the problem with it, one of the problems with liability insurance is the endless delays that drive up the costs of the court system, the legal system, and that it was our feeling that if we put an incentive in there, that if an insurer was going to delay, that they'd pay interest on that, on the ultimate award. It was clear to us that probably the biggest problem you have with liability insurance is the court process itself. And you also have to consider, and I hope we don't lose sight of this, despite the problems we have with liability insurance, we're dealing with people here, that these endless and delays, oftentimes purposeful, perhaps they would be shortened with prejudgment interest. And it's not new, of course. Many states have prejudgment interest, and Oregon, of course, does not. Just a feeling that Senator Thorne and I had, and we put her in there.
Okay.
Anything to get things moving a little quicker.
Bob, another issue that presents itself, where there's some variance, I think, between what the task force recommended and the Senate action, has to do with the cap on non-economic losses and whether or not there ought to be some relief provision when there's an extraordinary loss. And we're talking, I think, disabling brain damage, quadriplegia,
yeah,
those kinds of truly catastrophic losses. I believe the task force adopted amendments which perhaps construed by some to be too broad in nature did allow an escape from the limit in those circumstances. The Senate bill has taken those circumstances out. Can you maybe share with us your feelings in terms of whether we ought to reconsider
sure.
that subject?
Two things that I can speak to on this. One, we had an attorney on our committee from Eastern Oregon, a very colorful attorney, I might add. I'd like to think a very good one. Who his opinion was, you know, if you do your job as the lawyer, you're going to get, you can get the award in economic damages, what may now be non-economic. Well, I don't know. I've never been in a court, and I don't know how that works. I think it's pretty risky business. But the second thing was, we didn't have a lot of data on we knew how many cases we had that were over $50,000, a very small number, 9 or 11 or something like that. And it was the feeling of the task force that something, if we did put a cap, then put a restriction, and not an easy restriction, but I think the language we had worked very well. It's unfortunate that it's been misused and not described correctly. In effect, the way I remember, the escape clause, if you will, is if the injury were life-threatening. And I think that is a pretty high standard to me that a court could use.
Bob, a couple issues which I recall I think you had some interest in, which may not have made the task force report, but we're certainly willing to consider any issues that you and other members bring to us. I think one of them had to do with the state bar and specialization,
yeah,
and continuing legal education requirements, and another area in terms of modifying our procedure to a practice in some states has to do with what's called additor and remittitor, in which the court may review a jury verdict. Could you maybe share with
sure.
us your feelings on those two issues?
I have strong feelings on the specialization issue. and continue. There's a good possibility, in fact, in our House Labor Committee, we still may have a requirement that if you're going to practice law for people in workers' comp, that you will have some basic test, criteria, registration, who knows what, to do that type of law. It's always amazed me, as a lay person, but as a professional, that, and I went to just as much college and schooling as any attorney, yet I have to be tested, I have to go to continuing education courses, I have to be licensed, I'm inspected to make lights come off and on, and plugs work. And I don't want to belittle my trade, but yet when you've got people dealing with people's fortunes and their livelihoods, and in some cases whether they live or die, you don't have to do that. I believe very strongly in attorney specialization. I also think they should have mandatory continuing legal education. And that's enough of that, I guess. You know where I'm at on it. But see, what was the other issue, Representative?
The additor and remitter.
Additor and remitter. That was that was one of the issues that I simply thought that this committee should look at. It's done at the apparently it's done in the federal court system. We see it on a lot of these large liability cases where the jury will say one thing and the judge will arbitrarily add to or cut the final award. No strong feelings either way, but I think it's something that the committee should address. It may be one way. The only thing I saw in it, in the concept, was that it would take away the perception that juries are running wild.
Hey, Bob, I think there's some other questions here, but I want to extend you personally the invitation to join us at any time.
Appreciate
during our
that.
Hearings. Any amendments along these lines that you'd like to have us to consider, please let Ms. Weber know, and we'll be more than glad to entertain those amendments and any additional remarks you have along those lines. Ms. Weber?
Representative Shiprack, was there any data in the record before the task force, which would, in your opinion, as co-chair of the task force, establish a fair and substantial relationship between court awards of non-economic damages over $500,000 and liability insurance rates?
No.
Was there any other data at any other level, $300,000, for example?
Nope. All hearsay. We suffered from a lack of good data, and it's a good point you bring up that something else that really amazed me is that here, especially in we've picked up the court costs for the counties. Yet we don't even know what's going on in our own state, in our own courts. We don't even know what's going on in the courts across the street, I don't think. I understand there was some work that was going to be done, but until we have the data that's necessary, it's very, very difficult to make good decisions, and it hampered our work, and I hope that this committee's got some data that they can that's reliable. The only data that we have that I felt anywhere comfortable with, and it was suspect because it had not been reviewed, it had to do with frequency of claims. It did appear that perhaps there is an increase in claims frequency, and but we had to move on, adjourn, and that was never substantiated.
Counsel?
Another question. There's been testimony over at the Senate Judiciary Committee that non-economic damages run about 42% of court awards. In fact, that number came from an Oregon Medical Association actuarial review of the Medical Excess Liability Fund and is based on some NAIC closed claim studies. Would that information, with your expertise and one who sat through almost a year of hearings, Do you see any fair and substantial relationship between the cap that's in the bill and any reduction or limitation on liability rates?
I couldn't say you would, and I'll tell you why. It's because we, as I earlier stated, we're only talking about a small handful of awards in this area. You must remember the bulk of this money is in those 10 to, what is it? I think the average was 17,000, something like that. That's where all the action is. That's the money, and it's, you're not going to get away from that. That's the court system, people suing people because they've been damaged, and those are the typical awards. You can put a cap anywhere, and you're not going to substantially cut down the amount of dollars.
Counsel?
Was there any data in the record which, in your opinion, would establish a fair and substantial relationship between the existing rules of joint and several liability and liability insurance rates?
At the time, to answer your question, was hearsay evidence, and I'll tell you why. Is because the only thing that we had heard up until from the task force was a very recent, I believe, California initiative. I believe it was an initiative where the state of California had done something in joint and several. It was too early to see if, in fact, that had any impact whatsoever. People on both sides saying it did or it didn't. But to answer your question, no, we could not see a direct relationship. Again, lack of data.
Representative Shiprack, we talked a lot about staffing in the insurance commissioner's office. That was not made a part of the official bill. Would you comment on how important that is in the...
I can't believe they sent this out of the Senate without something relating to the insurance commissioner's office, particularly staffing. It's absolutely incredible to me that happened. If there is anything we could do immediately, this legislature would to adequately staff the insurance commissioner's office. Let me tell you, I just talked to Ted the other day. They don't have any actuaries now. None. Zero. How are you going to regulate insurance when you don't even have the basic tools available to do that? They need more auditors, more actuaries. They need to do a better job of dealing with the public. And you can't do that without an infusion of money, which is already there because of the premium tax that is collected by the state, the bulk of which goes to the general fund. I hope this committee can address that, certainly.
Representative Dix. Representative Shiprack, during the interim task force's deliberations, did you examine the question of positions and the categorization that takes place with insurance companies? We've heard other testimony before this committee that over the last 12 years, insurance companies have gone from 4 categories for physicians to 14 categories. And then in effect, by, for instance, pigeonholing obstetricians into one category, you're limiting the risk in that particular category, making rates go up and profits go up for the insurance companies in that situation. Did you examine that question?
We didn't spend a lot of time on the interim with that specific question. When it was brought up, my recollection was that it was fair for everybody involved. In other words, you weren't taking the obstetrics liability and putting it perhaps in the same category with a general practitioner. It's not unique to insurance. Certainly in workers' comp, we've got hundreds of classifications for that very reason. But we did not get into that to any great extent. Perhaps we should have, but at that time the relationship between certain doctors association and a certain insurance company was very well, they didn't want to talk about it, and it would have been very difficult to get that information. It would be my suspicion they were not real cooperative.
Representative Dix.
just to follow up, Bob, was there ever a discussion about the for instance, if this committee took the action of making those who write a medical malpractice fit doctors in the four categories again, was there ever any discussion, for instance, how much higher the general practitioner would have to pay and how that would affect the obstetrician's rates? Because I would imagine it would level out at some point, the obstetrician's rates coming down, the general practitioner's going up.
That's exactly what would happen, and we did not discuss that.
Representative Shiprock, just briefly on the liquor liability issue, we're expecting Representative Hooley here shortly, so I'll let you be excused in just a little bit longer, but what are some of your ideas in terms of how we might address the liquor liability issue? We do have bills that would create sort of a mandatory fund.